Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next presentation will be evaluation of CSM crop grow cotton for simulating cotton growth responses. And the presenter will be Kelly Thorpe, and so we'll go ahead with that.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Kelly Thorpe from USDA ARS in Maricopa, Arizona. And my work recently has been in evaluating the crop grow cotton model. It's part of the DSAT system of crop growth models. And we have a variety of field studies historically at our center. And I've collected those, or I've organized those data sets and used them for evaluation of the crop model. So cropping system models are useful tools for a variety of different applications, irrigation management and crop water use, nitrogen fertilizer. They have application in crop improvement and genetics, climatology and global climate change, precision agriculture and economics. Pretty much everything that we're talking about at this meeting should have an application for crop models. CSM crop grow cotton is actually a reparameterization of a soybean model, and currently it's been tested mostly in the southeast. So there is a need for testing this model under arid irrigated conditions such as that in central Arizona. So that was the objective here, and as I mentioned, I'm using data from three historic studies at our site. The crop grow component of the model is the crop growth module. The model simulates growth stages of cotton based on photothermal time, so we can get dates for simulated dates for emergence, first flower, first leaf, first seed, first cracked boll, etc. The model calculates flower and boll number and also fruit abortion. The model simulates light interception by assuming a hedgerow canopy. So it's basically an elliptical canopy that's defined by the crop height and crop width. Potential carbon assimilation is calculated using equations at the leaf level, using Farquhar equations. And growth and maintenance respiration are calculated explicitly and then deducted from the potential carbon to be assimilated. Further reductions are calculated based on the soil water and nitrogen deficits of the system. For soil water balance and evapotranspiration, the model uses a tipping bucket approach. This is the Ritchie method for soil water redistribution. We typically have a layered soil profile with about 10 layers down to 210 centimeters. For evapotranspiration, there are several different choices, including Priestley-Taylor or a modified approach based on FAO 56. And I'll talk later about further modifications to that evapotranspiration calculation. Three different sets of field experiments were used to evaluate this model for central Arizona. First was the FACE experiments. These are very famous experiments conducted in the early 90s at our station. FACE stands for Free Air Carbon Dioxide Enrichment. The researchers at that time installed facilities in the field that actually elevated the carbon dioxide concentration within the canopy to test for crop responses to expected global climate change. So the FACE treatments actually elevated the carbon dioxide in the canopy to 550 parts per million for 14 hours daily. Ambient conditions of carbon dioxide in the air at that time were about 370 parts per million. There were also wet and dry irrigation treatments associated with that study, and these studies were conducted in 1990 and 91 when I was a junior high student. AgEyes was an experiment conducted later. AgEyes stands for Agricultural Irrigation Imaging System. At this time, the researchers had a linear move system in the field, and they installed a rail cart system on it, where the cart held different sensors, and as the linear moved across the field, the cart would move laterally along the linear in sort of like a large-scale printer of some kind, collecting data of the entire field. They had a 4x4 Latin square field experiment at that time to test this system under optimum and low water, and optimum nitrogen and low nitrogen. The data that I'm going to be using was collected in 1999. And finally, the FICE experiments, which stands for FAO 56 Irrigation Scheduling Experiments. At this time, the researchers were mainly interested in estimating crop coefficients using both standard methods that are present within the FAO 56 methodology and also using remotely sensed NDVI to estimate those crop coefficients. As subtreatments in those experiments, we had sparse typical and dense planting densities and high and low nitrogen treatments to provide variability in plant growth. And those experiments were conducted in 2002 and 2003. So none of the experiments were really conducted with the objective to evaluate crop growth models. And so the availability and quality of the data for that purpose varies quite substantially. Generally, we have some information about crop development. Generally, emergence dates can be obtained from plant counts and planting densities. Flowering dates are available or are observed for some studies. For others, we just have digital photographs that help us to understand about when the crop began to flower. And desiccation dates, as recorded, can help us understand when the crop was finished. Typically, crop growth data was collected by destructively sampling biomass. So we have dry weights and LAI for most of the experiments. Canopy height and width measurements were also collected. And for all the experiments, we have soil water status monitored, and we can estimate ET from neutron probe readings that were collected in the field. So here is a table that shows some of the calibration results. My approach was basically to evaluate the model for individually for each of the five experiments, where I'm calibrating essentially on the most standard treatment that a grower might use, and then testing the model on other treatments that were imposed during the experiment. The parameters here, if I can get a mouse, the first parameters here are mainly dealing with photothermal time, adjusting how long it takes the crop to progress through certain growth stages. LF max is a parameter that governs the photosynthesis rate, or the rate at which CO2 is assimilated within the plant leaves. SLAVR is a specific leaf area parameter that helps govern the leaf area index simulation. Other parameters adjust the amount of carbon that is partitioned to bowls. In the ecotype file, we have some parameters related to crop height and width and other photothermal time parameters. An important one is the EO ratio parameter, which is essentially a crop coefficient. And so I have adjusted that one to get improved ET simulations. Here shows for the FACE experiments in 1990 and 1991, the model response to irrigation treatments. In 1990, we had a deficit of 130 millimeters over the season between the well-watered and water-limited irrigation. In 1991, that deficit was increased to 256 millimeters. The plot shows leaf area index, canopy weight, and canopy height for all of those seasons, where the diamonds represent the well-watered treatment measured, and the X's represent the dry treatment measured. And we can see that the model is responding to those treatments for all three of these measurements. For the 1999 AgEyes experiment, there was a quite a bit lower deficit. Only a 64 millimeter deficit was imposed between wet and dry treatments in that year. And we really aren't seeing much of a response to the model. A small response in measured data shows that there was indeed an actual response to water-limited conditions during the field experiment, but the model is not tending to respond to deficits as low as 64 millimeters over the season. Model response to nitrogen fertilizer. This was again for the 1999 AgEyes experiment. Model showing a response in leaf area index, canopy height, and canopy weight to the reduced nitrogen fertilization in that year. Model response to planting density. Again, it was the FICE experiments where planting density treatments were imposed. Generally, what we're finding is that the model is overestimating leaf area index for the dense treatments. And that could be due to issues in the model itself, but also in this experiment, the we didn't have actual leaf area index measurements. These measurements are estimated from remote sensing. So it could be one or the other reason. We didn't have any canopy weight measurements in 2002, but in 2003 we did, and the model is tending to respond at least in the right direction to sparse and dense treatments. Model response to FACE, or free air enrichment, carbon dioxide enrichment. Here showing that the model is responding appropriately. Under FACE, we have higher leaf area index and higher canopy weight simulated, also measured in the field. So this demonstrates that the model can be a useful tool for studying the effects of global climate change on cotton growth. Unfortunately, the yield data that was collected in each of these experiments had some issue that made it difficult to use the data for testing the model. For instance, during the FACE experiments, all of the cotton was harvested 1 month earlier than typically done, and that was to save on the carbon dioxide expense for elevating CO2. For ag eyes, there was an infestation of Liguus during the end of the season, and in that particular season, it tended to differentially choose the well-managed treatments. So actually, in that season, the well-managed treatments were had lower yield than the deficit treatments. So not a very good representative yield data set for testing the model. And in FICE, the yield samples were unfortunately not oven-dried. This model simulates dry weight, so we need oven-dried samples to get a good estimate of yield. In terms of evapotranspiration, I had to modify the entire evapotranspiration calculation in the model in order to get the data to fit. I would think that the original FAO 56 approach that's included in the model currently dates back to the mid-90s. Since then, we've had the ASCE standardized reference equation for calculating reference evapotranspiration. I included those equations into the model in all of the results presented here. And I also added a new approach that was developed by Kendall DeYoung at ARS in Fort Collins to calculate a crop coefficient based on the simulated leaf area index within the simulation model. Only then could I get crop coefficient values that were reasonable as reported by FAO 56. For instance, using the old original code that was within the model, I was needing crop coefficients around 1.4 to 1.6 to get ET simulated appropriately. With the coding changes that I added, I'm getting KC values of about 1.14 to 1.18, which is more reasonable given the reports in FAO 56. So in conclusion, my opinion is that the crop growth component of the crop grow model is very well done. It responds appropriately to management, and it does respond appropriately to atmospheric CO2 concentration. I think in the future, most of the work should probably be put into the water component. I've explained some of the ET adjustments that I've made. I do have plans for future efforts to add an energy balance approach within this model, and that would allow us to also simulate canopy temperature, which is very important in an arid climate like Arizona, because due to evaporative cooling, the canopy can actually be many degrees cooler than the surrounding air. And since we're using a weather station air temperature to drive our simulation, it would probably be more accurate to use that canopy temperature within the arid environment of Arizona. Okay, thank you.